Blog Talk Radio.
The year, 1888. The place, London's East End. Dead and mutilated bodies are popping up all over, from Stamford to Whitechapel. Jack the Ripper is leaving his mark, and the city's on edge. Yvonne Mason is back with a tale of murder and millinery. The Rhodes Hat Factory is booming while the body count rises. Why now? How are these hats connected? Has the Hatter gone mad? Mad Hatter, Yvonne Mason. Available now on Amazon.com.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It is Thursday night, November the 9th. I mean, November. I'm already ahead of myself. March the 9th. Can y'all believe that we're already in the end of the first quarter of this year? I went to sleep one night. It was Christmas. I woke up the next day, and it's March the 9th. I'm going to go to sleep tonight, wake up tomorrow, and it's probably going to be Christmas again. I call it the silly season. That being said, that was a piece of shameless promotion because, what can I say? It's my show. It's called The Mad Hatter, and my friend and voiceover man who does all of my voiceovers for me by the name of Christopher Dunham did that ad for me, and it's one of my favorite ads because the story is about a hat maker, and he is insane. And the reason he is insane is because during the years of early America, they tanned hides with mercury, and it would drive them insane. So hence the Mad Hatter. I will leave the rest up for you to read. Our show is reaching over 10,000 listeners every time we bring somebody on this show. Our listener base increases, and I am so grateful for that because we're heard all over the world. And people say, you can't be, but yeah, we are. And let me just tell you, between the show itself, and I every week I have to give a shout out to Australia because they are 72% of my listener base on this show, on Blog Talk Radio. They beat the USA out 2-1. Now that's a shame. Where are my USA listeners? What are y'all doing? Sleeping? Dreaming? I don't know. But we are heard in Hungary and Norway, Bulgaria, Malaysia, Vietnam, the Ukraine, Finland, Sweden, Korea, Ecuador, Tunisia, the Netherlands, the Russian Federation of all places, Singapore, of course the USA, minorly, Germany, Egypt, Ireland, the UK, Indonesia, Australia, Croatia, Canada, New Zealand, Brazil, Taiwan, South Africa, Pakistan, India, Saudi Arabia, Portugal, and Nigeria. Ladies and gentlemen, we're also here in Sweden and Norway. Ladies and gentlemen, it doesn't get any better than this show. And you know what the beauty of this show is? It doesn't cost you anything. This is anywhere else you go to do a show, more times than not, you have to pay to be a sponsor on the show. I do this for the love of paying it forward. So if you've got a book, you've got art, you've got music, you've got a business, you have a passion, you have a platform, and you just want to chat for an hour, come join me. Just tell me you want to do it. It's no big deal. Just get in contact with me at offthechainradio@yahoo.com. Because trust me, it doesn't get any better than this. Also, if you want to advertise, go to advertisecast.com and look up Off the Chain. My prices are so cheap, it's almost criminal. We'll do an ad, we'll do a shout out, we'll do a happy birthday if you want to. Just let us know. Under my married name, Yvonne Sewell, if you go on Vida.com, V-I-D-A, all capital letters, and look up my name, you will see my design on T-shirts, totes, handbags, and shawls and scarves. These are all my photographs that I have taken over the years. This company approached me. It wasn't even one of my dreams. I just enjoy taking photographs. They approached me and asked me to put my designs on their clothing. So I did. Now, if you want to buy my photographs, go to vogue.com and look up Yvonne Mason. And if you want to buy my books, go on Amazon. Tonight, however, I had this wonderful guest, and he is just an amazing human being. We chatted a moment before the show, and I learned so much about him, I cannot wait to share it. He is author George Kramer, and he started writing early in life. And in fifth grade, he started dabbling with his pen and paper, and that was instrumental since his writing will serve as a crucial outlet for him later in life, and I'm anxious to find that out. The venting allowed him to get a handle on his trials and tribulations in growing up with eight other siblings. Now, I thought it was tough being the oldest of five siblings, but imagine having eight brothers and sisters. George spread his wings and embraced writings in all the genres. As it stands, he has over 150 articles published online for various websites. He has written two books of unconventional poetry, countless short stories, and six books of the popular Arcata series. Additionally, George has written a medical hall book called Blind to Blood. That is his latest release, and wait till you hear about this. But you're not going to get to hear about it in the front of the show, so you got to hang around. Johnny Carson taught me well. You don't put your best out there in the front of the show because people had a habit of turning him off late at night and going to bed. So he taught me, wait till near the end to bring out the best. George was born and raised in Brooklyn, New York. He was raised on Long Island and is a natural-born triplet. He moved to Indiana in 1989, and he currently resides in McCordsville with his wife and his beautiful daughter. Welcome, George. It is so nice to have you on the show tonight.
Thank you, Yvonne. I'm glad to be here.
So, you have our chat before the show has just really got my interest piqued. Tell me a little bit about the history of George, how you came to be, why you came to be, your siblings, your triplet. You have a younger brother that is wonderfully unique because he can't hear, and I'm sure he keeps y'all in stitches, and I'm sure he is so successful that it's amazing. So tell me about you.
Okay, I'm one of nine. As you said, natural born triplet. There's six boys and three girls. And I consider myself the double middle child syndrome because I'm the middle triplet and I'm like the sixth born of nine. So I'm within the range of that. But Sharon was born first, a minute later me, 7 minutes later my brother Mark. And then my youngest brother Patrick was born deaf in November of 1964. The German measles swept the East Coast, especially the Northeast. And my mom and anybody else, any other woman that was pregnant, got infected with the German measles. And consequently, a lot of deaf people were born on that. As a matter of fact, on the cover of Life magazine on that month, it talks about the epidemic that spread on the East Coast.
Wow.
Because I looked it up. And I love to write. In fifth grade, there was a teacher talking about reading Treasure Island. I started dabbling on a piece of paper with a pen because it was pre-internet, pre-computers, showing my age here. And then it went into short stories, plays, two novels. One, the first novel I wrote was The Day Kids Took Over the Schools, and actually the teachers were in on it. And one was called Space Navigation, which was based on Star Trek. And I had all of those books and short stories at age 16 on a bookshelf. And I went to school one day, and I got into a disagreement with one of my brothers. Surprise, you got five brothers. I come home, and my brother had thrown everything out, and garbage went two times a week in New York, and they had already come, and so I lost everything. So from age 16 to 18, I did not write at all. And at 18, I started writing poetry. And it's considered unconventional because a lot of people don't understand it, which is fine. It's open to interpretation, poetry is.
And we were talking about that earlier, that poetry, even the classics, Edgar Allan Poe, some of the ones that I don't read, some of the English poets, everything is open to interpretation. What the poet was thinking as they were writing it does not necessarily mean that the reader is interpreting it in the same way. For years, I didn't understand what the raven was all about until I researched Poe, because it is so dark and it is so allegorical that if you don't understand the background about it, it's hard to understand why he would even write about the raven.
Right, and Edgar Allan Poe was brilliant too. But also, when you get into poetry and writing, word choice is very interesting too, depending on what you want to convey. Because if I said, I held something, or I grasped something, to me, I get two different mental pictures of what I'm trying to convey. So word choice is very important to me when I write as well, you know, to try and fit the situation to what I want.
That's true, because if you hold something, it's something that is either in your hand or you have your arms around it. To grasp something means to hold it extremely tight, almost to the point which you might crush it.
Yes, consequently, something is going on if you're grasping it versus holding it. So, yeah, so, and I like doing wordplay, a play on words. That's how I keep my wit, or I attempt to keep my sharp. Is by using wordplay.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, and at work, I try and have, every once in a while, I have rhyme day and ask people to rhyme. You don't have to do it every line because I'm in my prime and I'm always on time. Stuff like that, you know, silly stuff just to make the day go faster. And then I've also done, start words with a certain letter. Like, I was in a V war, anything that started with V, voluptuous, you know, something like that, vacant, with an anesthesiologist, and we had fun doing it. And it helps your brain stay active. It develops rapport with people, and it also helps make time go by.
That's true, and what it also can do is open up an avenue of conversation between you and a coworker that you might not have bothered with before.
Oh, Yvonne, you hit it on the nail. You know what I tell people? Well, certain people. I initiate a conversation. I take a step back, see where it goes, and then every once in a while I'll interject and add something and see where that goes and take a step back. I find it fascinating how you can start talking about taxes, but at the end of the conversation, you're talking about glasses that you wore last week. I mean, it's not relative to the beginning topic. It's fascinating. I do it all the time.
And that's true. The way this show is, because like I told you, I don't script my shows. I don't think scripted shows are fun, because you don't find me. And it's just like the conversation. That's where the show's going to go. One word to the next. It's so much fun.
Yes. Yep. I'm very serious about my job, about my writing, but I like to have fun. It's the way I roll.
Most of us tend to take life too seriously anyway, instead of just in the moment and running with it. We're too busy worrying about tomorrow and we forget to live into today.
Exactly. And the Arcadius books that I wrote, six of them, I've never read any fantasy until about 2 or 3 years ago. And I sat down and I said, I can do this. I can write a fantasy book, but I don't know what about. And so I was at my triplet sister's house a couple weeks later. It was in the back of my mind. And she had paint. She was going to paint the inside of a house. And on one section of the floor, she had certain colors. On the other section of the floor, she had other colors. I said, what's this? And she goes, well, here's the primary colors, red, blue, and yellow, and these are the offshoots of red, blue, and yellow. And bang, I got an idea for a storyline. That's how my creative mind works. You could say something, and it triggers my creative juices. So the Arcadius and the Sorcerers are based on the colored power. So red, blue, and yellow are called primaries. And when red marries a blue, a purple power baby is born, and that's considered secondaries. A red marries a yellow, an orange. Yellow marries blue. It's a green power baby, and that's a secondary. And they're considered secondaries, not as powerful. So at the end of book one, they feel like they're not being treated fairly. So in book two, a war erupts. So it's fantasy, but it also could be related somehow to today's society. But what I love, the difference between fantasy and science fiction. Science fiction is, if you go to a planet, you got to explain the ship, the propulsion system, the atmosphere, how humans are going to live. In fantasy, I could talk about dragons that breathe fire and trees, and it's okay. That's what I love about fantasy.
Well, and also in that series of books, and it's for young, is it for young adult or is it for children or teens?
Oh, it's for 10 and up. I'll tell you what, Yvonne, I've gotten tons of accolades from people, especially their children. I have friends that had a son that does not like to read, hates to read, does not do well in school. I said, well, you know, try a book. He goes, no, I'll buy all of them and see what happens. And then he Facebooked me and his son Facebooked me, telling me how much his son or him loved the books and he's getting into reading. A friend at work said he never really was much into reading after he finished school to get his degree for where I work. And now I'm getting him into reading again. And this one is awesome. A child with ADD, a friend's son, she bought a few of my books, and she goes, I don't know if he's going to read this. I said, you know what? That's fine. If he doesn't, it's fine. But just, you know, let him read it. And he had no problem reading it, loved it, and now she's buying the rest of the series. Because he had that disability, it did not inhibit him from reading my books. And that was an honor. I mean, that sounds corny, but I felt honored that that child was able to read my books and not many other books.
It doesn't sound corny. It sounds wonderful, George, because I have children and grandchildren that are ADD and ADHD, and to get one of them to sit down for 5 minutes to read is an amazing thing, and you as an author, that is one of the best accolades that anyone can pay you, is that a child who has a disability, I like to call it uniqueness, to get that child to read something you wrote and enjoy it, that is an absolute milestone for you and for that child, because I'm sitting here thinking, use primary and secondary colors in these stories, and not only did you tell a story, but you taught these children the color wheels and how to mix colors and match colors and make colors work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was educational, plus a really, really good action storyline that grabs your attention and keeps your attention. And I had a woman that her 12-year-old son was supposed to be sleeping at 2:30 in the morning and on a school night, and she caught him in his room reading one of my books. So it captures kids' attention, and so I'm very happy with it. I actually have a small fan base, and they're asking for book 7, so eventually I'm going to write book 7.
You're going to have to, because you can't leave those children hanging up, for crying out loud. You got to keep those kids interested.
Yes, yes, and I will. I have another. When I was back home in New York in junior high, they had a bounty hunter with a German Shepherd dog come to the auditorium and talk about being a bounty hunter. And it was in New York Newsday and all that, and it fascinated me to this day. So one of the anesthesiologists I'm friends with, I asked him if I could model a bounty hunter off him, and I called it Grunther, the Magical Bounty Hunter, and I started that book, and he's going to go, and he's already met Arcadius. In book five, I introduced him. That way I can have a standalone series, and I'm yet to write that. So I just love fantasy because you can go anywhere with it. But with
you got to finish that because you are talking to a bounty hunter.
Well, you know, the first five books, the best three words of those books are "to be continued."
Sweet.
Book six is right. Book six is the end with a question mark. I leave it open. So, you know, people wanted it, and I was actually at the Christmas and Hobby Show last year doing book signing, and someone came up to me that I didn't know when I was going to the restroom, and they said, I heard some kids talking about how they want a seventh book of yours because they have all six. I was like, oh, okay. Because they, you know, I said, who told you that? And they said, a few kids. I overheard them talking. I was like, oh, okay. So I'll write book seven. So it was, you know, I just love. It's not to feed my ego, although I have a vast one, I'm told. It's not to feed the ego. It is because I write for the people. And yes, you want the money. I'm not gonna lie. I don't want the money, but I derive great pleasure from people enjoying my books. I mean, it's as simple as that. It's an intellectual high that I can't describe it. That's all I can say.
I understand it. Because what happens is we as writers write because we cannot not write. We have to write. If we don't write, we're well even more insane than we already are because the voices in our head won't shut up. But when someone comes up to you, especially a child, George, because children, as a general rule, they don't like anything. They don't even like themselves. But when a child comes up to a writer and says, I really like your book, when are you going to do the next one? Because I can't wait to read it. It makes that writer want to go back home, shut the world out, sit down and put that next book out just so that child can enjoy it. Because that's one of the things that that child truly, truly enjoys.
I agree. I would love to do it full time. I'm obviously not in a position right now, but because I work full-time, and I have a wife and a 12-year-old daughter, and that occupies a lot of my time, of course. So when I get to write, I try and write as much. And, yeah, it is a fire in your belly when someone tells you, hey, we like your books. Absolutely.
I have a friend of mine who is just retired from teaching, and she's sitting here with me listening on the show, and she brought up a very good point. She says, think of J.K. Rowling's and the Harry Potter books, because children couldn't wait to get their hands on those books, and they waited for years for her to put those books out. So consider, and she did it in sequence. So you've got a base going. A young children's base of fans going, that is such a compliment to you as a writer.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, adults have spoken to me privately on social media, emailed me, these books need to be made into movies. I was like, yeah, I don't have several million dollars. I would love it. Don't get me wrong. I would love it. I wanted them in graphic novels. Originally, I wasn't even going to write a book. I was going to have them in graphic novels, but I did some pricing on artists, and the cheapest one I could find, I don't know if anybody's cheaper, but it was $125 a page, and
wow.
I just couldn't do that, so I wrote the books. And if anybody out there wants to help produce my Arcadius book, that would be awesome.
Anything's possible on this show. I'm going to tell you, I've had some of my guests call me up and say, Yvonne, this just happened. So because we are all over the world, anything is possible, George. Anything is, and I was highly probable. I don't discount anything, especially where this show's concerned, because some strange things have happened with the guest on my show, and in a good way.
Well, that's awesome, because I write for, you know, the target audience is, you know, 10 and up, and they make up a good segment of the population. And, you know, if the kids want to go, the parents are going to go, and then they'll tell people. So I could see this taking off if someone does it. But, you know, if it doesn't, that's great, because I'll continue to write because I love it so much.
Well, the thing is, what you have done is you have opened up an avenue, especially for children with disabilities, that maybe you're the only one that could have reached them. And without those books, they might not have ever been reached. You've given those children a direction in life that will, without a doubt, help them as they move forward in life. Because if they can sit down with ADD and ADHD children, they do good to sit still for 5 minutes, much less a whole day of class, because their brains are wired differently. We have many brains under one umbrella that works in conjunction with each other. Children with ADD and ADHD, they have many brains that work independently, and they don't always work in conjunction with each other. So a child with that uniqueness about them, most of them are highly intelligent. Many of them are geniuses. They're very creative, but because they cannot focus, they bounce around from task to task, and they get bored easily. So for you to be able to reach a child with ADD with a book, my heart swells with pride for you, because that is an amazing accomplishment.
Well, I appreciate that, and I did feel humbled, if you will, by that. And, you know, it's a funny story about being humbled, is because I had done a book signing, and I sold a lot, and I went to work that Monday and told everybody, hey, I sold a lot of these books, and everybody congratulated me. So I went into a room and told somebody, hey, you know, I did this, and this, and they said, hey, great, can you get me this? So it brought me down, which I needed. They're like, yes, great, but now we need to get to work. And I was like, okay, I need to focus. Thank you. I thanked her, even though I was on she lowered my high for a minute, but that's fine.
Well, my teacher friend, she just wrote me a note. She says, your books draw children into that world. That is the accomplishment, is your books bring those children into that literary world, into that fantasy world with all of the colors, and they can participate in that world, and that's why they read them.
You know, it's funny when you say that. No, I'm glad. I'm very happy. I'm not trying to diminish that. But it reminded me of a story. My wife always tells me I am in Georgie land, and that's what she calls it, because I space out and I'm thinking of things, and then I write it down later on. But she calls it Georgie land, and that fantasy world came from Georgie land. So.
There you go, see? Because now you understand where the children go when they're into that book. They are in Georgie land, and they're perfectly happy there because they want to go on that adventure.
Well, you know what I did, too? I wrote a screenplay for the first Arcadius book, but I also wrote a commercial and filmed it at my house. I wrote the script and got the actors, friends, but I wanted my daughter in it, and I wrote her in it, and then because she is a glory-seeking hound, just like me, but she refused to do it, so I had a neighbor do it, and we had it filmed, and I put it on YouTube, but, you know, it was free, it was fun, it wasn't high quality, but it was fun, and everybody enjoyed it. Which I can segue into my medical thriller, too, is because that cover was done in my living room. We just moved a couple pieces of furniture. They took this, I don't know the name of it, Greg Huber, photography did it, a friend of mine. Great, great guy, great company. But he put this, like, not black top, but black screen high up and then onto the ground, and had a dome light focusing on Ben and Brittany, who are the actors on there. And it was amazing. It came out great. And the fake blood was corn syrup with red dye mixed And I just put a fork and let it drip onto Brittany. I said, Brittany, I want you to, because I directed it. I said, Brittany, I want you to have open eyes with a vacant stare. Then, if you know the Killing Joke with the Joker from Batman, if not, look it up. I know what the Joker looks like. I want that evil grin. He looked it up. He goes, I got it.
Wow.
Now, there's a yellow and brown discoloration on his left side of the face. I had my wife put makeup on for him because in the book, the Ben, my character, was born all across his face and body, a discoloration, yellow and brown. So his nickname was Mustard growing up. So it gets how he's teased, he's tormented, and he doesn't like his mom. And actually, he hates her. I love my mom, by the way. I just want to let everybody know I love my mom. But so he goes. His mom goes into one of her drunken stupors, and he has to go to the ER. And he sees three people in the ER with scrubs on, going up to the nurse's station. And he tries to talk to them, but they're very distracted about his discoloration. So he only gets a minimal amount, but he finds out that they're tissue procurement specialists. So he wants to do it because now he can kill people. And, you know, well, originally for the first 3 years, he does it while they're dead because this is the concern I have. Organs and tissue are different. Organs is when people are alive and they harvest. Tissue is when they're dead. Now, the skin and the heart are tissue, but when they're dead, I mean, they're organs, but when they're dead, they're tissue. So I give a little bit of background on tissue procurement before I go into the McCabe stuff.
Ladies and gentlemen, the name of George's book is Blind to Blood. Now, before you go any further, tell the folks how long it took you to write this book and why.
Oh, okay. It took 8 years. I started writing it in 2009 while I had been in tissue for many years. And I wrote it because I wanted people to know about tissue, the importance of it and the importance of donation. I wrote 501 pages, sent it to an editor. The only problem was she sent it back saying, George, I had a criminal justice degree, and 95% of your police procedure were wrong. You need to rewrite it. Now, Yvonne, I was not writing 500 pages over again. I was not going to do research on the correct police procedure because I had other projects going on. So I said, you know what, the heck with it. I'll just leave it alone. So years passed. I started working at a hospital, and I started telling people about a medical thriller, the horror I wrote. And they said, well, you need to rewrite it. I was like, but I can't do the police procedure. How do I do it? Then an epiphany occurred. Did someone talk about something totally off topic, but something said it that made me say, you know what? This is what I can do. What I started to do, what I wrote, is write it after he gets caught. He's in an insane asylum, and he's writing it as a journal because he wants people to read his side of the story. So he knows people are going to read it. He has a photographic memory. So instead of chapters, now we have entries of journals, of dates. And it starts after he gets caught, so you don't need any police procedure. So that's when I started rewriting it.
Wow.
And it's half the thing. Because I took all of the – well, I put some police in it because, you know, I had to. He's killing people.
Right.
But it was totally minimal. So I was very pleased with it. And as a matter of fact, I wrote on Facebook today, a doctor was reading my book in a break room where I work. And he was behind me, so I want to know what his opinion was. And he had his eyes bulging out, forehead was creased. And it was looked like he was incredulous. And he looked up at me when he noticed my presence. And I gave him an exaggerated wink, like, I know what you're thinking. And he goes, George, where'd you get some of these ideas from? And he explained a couple of things. He explained a couple of things that happened in the book, and I don't want to give it away. And I explained why, how I got that. But I said, you know, my imagination. He goes, George, this book is so far removed from your Arcadia series. I said, I know, and I've told people that. This is a medical horror. This is not a YA fantasy. You have to change your mindset. I had to change my mindset from fantasy to medical horror. And it's interesting when I go to book signings, when I go to book signings, I'm bringing both sets of books, depending on where I'm. If I'm at a comic book store, I'm not going to bring my medical horror because there's mostly kids. But if I'm going to conventions or a bookstore, yeah, I'm going to bring both of them. I have to go from a serial killer mindset to a YA fantasy mindset. It's very interesting. Very interesting.
I love it because that's where my mind works. Now, George, put this in the back of your memory banks, my friend. My degree is also in criminal justice. I am also a bounty hunter. So the next time you want to do a book with police procedures, feel free to hit me up, and I will be glad to help you with them.
Okay. Will do. Will do.
No problem.
You know, it's so funny, Yvonne. I have this friend at work. I'm not going to name names. And another friend goes to me, George, that guy would be a perfect serial killer if you ever write another one. So no, I'm friends with the other guy. So I went up to him and I said, hey, dude, I'm going to write a sequel to my book if it does well, and it's doing well. I said, do you want to be the serial killer in my book? And he goes, you want me to be a serial killer in your book? I was like, yeah. He goes, yes. I was like, okay, all right.
You would be surprised. People love to be in books.
Oh, yeah. I'll segue into something about that, too. But so now I'm going to have Ben, the serial killer, meet the other serial killer. And wherever my mind takes me, whether they team up, whether they don't, I'm in the thought process right now. I don't write outlines. So it just comes out. A lot of authors write outlines. I don't. I just let it flow. But
yep.
Speaking of yes, when he said that, I asked people, no, I'm sorry, the reciprocal. People asked me to kill them off in the book. And the first two, three people are fictitious. The rest of the people I am friends with, they asked me to kill them off. And some of them I used their real names because can I use your real name? Yeah. Okay. So one of them asked me, can you kill me horrifically? I was like, sure. Okay. So
that is too
very
funny.
Interesting.
But well, we have a caller, George. Let's see what they want to bring to the table. Hello, caller. You're on the air. How can we help you? They didn't want to play with us. They hung up.
I'm sorry. I missed that, Yvonne.
Well, we had a caller. I thought they were going to answer a question. And when I said hello, they hung up. Now we have a stalker. Okay. that can be your next victim.
So what's interesting is how I even discovered tissue procurement, because I never heard of it. I worked at this nursing home, and every morning at 9:30, we would have a meeting. And I sat next to a person and I became friends with. And I asked her what she used to do before she got this job. And she said, tissue procurement. I'm like, what's that? And she said, well, you take out grafts, body parts from people when they're dead for donation. It's very important. And I said, you know what? Sign me up. Well, do you have any medical background? I was going to school for certified surgical technologies at the time. And I said, yes. So I interviewed. And I got on. So
wow.
And then you have to watch three recoveries, and then after that, it's sink or swim. And it just seemed like I had a natural proclivity to surgically removing body parts for donation.
So when you procure And the reason I'm interested is because my 13-year-old granddaughter died of an asthma attack almost 2 years ago, and we donated her heart, her lungs, her liver, her kidneys, and her corneas. So you are the person that goes in and helps the surgical team procure these organs and these tissues?
Well, the what you described as organs, that's that would be doctors and nurses and all that. Tissues, once they expire, you have a certain amount of time to remove those grafts, and you have age restrictions. So, there's a circulator in the room, and then there's two tissue procurements, one taking one side, one taking the other, and I've done the left side, the left tissue procurement, right, and I've done circulating too. But there's a lot of protocol that goes in before a donation occurs. I mean, you have to talk to the family. You have to ask medical questions. Have you had cancer in the last 5 years? If so, what? Because there's a lot of rule outs, because you don't want tainted grafts going into other people. And it's highly, highly regulated, which I agree with, from the FDA. You have to read tons of SOPs, standard operating procedures, before you even go out on the road. So,
wow.
And I explained a little bit of that. Yeah, I explained a little bit of that, how serious it is. But then I put the serial killer's take on it. I try and make it light, despite the fact that donation is a very serious thing. I just want to bring it to people's attention and tell a story.
Well, and as I've said many, many times in interviews, in everything that we read, whether it's fiction, nonfiction, a periodical, a newspaper, a magazine, and especially in fiction, if we open up our minds when we're reading fiction, there is really so much to learn. Just like even though your main character is a nefarious bad guy, you teach people, A, that tissue donation and organ donation is very important, and I am a firm believer in that, and two, you talk about what the protocols are and that, you know, people just don't come in and start ripping off body parts when somebody's dying, that there are procedures one has to go to, and how important it is to be willing to donate that so someone else might have a chance in life that otherwise I might not. So we always learn something if we open up our minds.
Yes, and what my book, I call it Faction. I take facts and build a fiction story around it. But I totally agree with you. Any type of fiction, nonfiction, the author has to do research. He has to know what he's talking about for it to make sense. And you learn in the process. Someone told me the other day that they didn't learn anything from fiction. I looked at them, I was like, I'm sorry, I do not believe you. Because I don't care if it's about the letter D someone wrote about. You will learn about the letter D, even if it's fiction. I mean, you cannot.
So. Not if you've got an open mind, because even in fiction, there are things to learn. All right, let's take my least favorite genre, romance. I don't read romance. I don't write romance. However, people that do, if they set that story, let's say in Italy, they're not going to make up a town in Italy, and they're not going to make up the historical places in Italy, because then it would not be believable. So they do their research on Italy because the culture is different, the food is different, the wines are different, the people are different, the language is different, the attitudes might be different. So they have to do their research to make it believable. And like you, if somebody says, well, I don't learn anything when I read fiction, they're not reading fiction the way we read it.
Exactly. And, you know, the funny thing about romance is, while, you know, you have to respect it because it's a huge market.
Sure.
I used to make fun of my wife that read what I called romance novels. And she goes, well, and she made fun of it. She said, have you ever read one? I was like, no. She goes, here's my favorite book. Read it. I was like, okay. So I read it. I breezed through it. And she goes, what do you think? I said, it's unrealistic. She goes, well, so is fantasy. I was like, I know, but every page they're making out, or the guy is trying to protect the girl. I said, I could write something like that. She goes, go ahead. So I'm not going to write it. If I were to write romance, it would be under a girl's name, not a guy's name, a pen name. But she challenged me to write one. So I haven't, you know, I'm in the foreseeable future, I'm not going to do it, but it was an interesting challenge.
Well, George, let me tell you something. It's a lot harder than you think.
I you know what? I'm going to respect that because I haven't even done any research. I haven't even put anything on the paper. So I'm sure I'll find out.
Well, because you have to, even though they're making out and the guy's trying to protect the girl, men have to get into the mindset of a woman and how a woman feels. And because men and women are wired different, that's almost an impossibility because women are wired to run on emotion. Men are wired to run on logic. So when you try to take a romance and write it, let's say from a man's perspective, and yet try to get in the head of a woman, I'm going to tell you, George, it's a scary place. You don't want to go there.
Okay, and I did not mean any disrespect at all.
Oh, no,
any romance authors. I meant no disrespect.
They don't take it that way. Trust me, they don't.
Okay. All right, because, you know, you know what? I'm a writer. I don't like when. You know what? That reminds me of another story. I told you I'm full of stories.
That's okay. That's what we're here for.
Okay. Someone wrote on me on my thing when I wrote about my medical horror being published. She said to me that, George, you don't really consider yourself published because you're self-published, do you? Really? I was like, oh my God. I mean, I was nice and respectful. Yeah, she wrote that. She wrote that, and I was like, well, first of all, I have to write it. Then I have to have it edited. Then I have to have the book cover. Then I have to have the book cover formatted. Then I have to have the book formatted. Then I have to promote it, market it, book sign it, you know, do everything. I was like, of course I'm an author. Of course I'm published. So I was just surprised that someone wrote that.
Well, let me tell you, there are a lot of us that I've been in this business for a long, long time. And when I first started, I was told no self-respecting reader will write a self-published author. And I looked at them and I said, yes, they will, because we're not only self-published, we're independent. Not only are we independent, but we control the content, the cover, and everything else, and marketing and everything else that goes into our work. How many of the traditional authors can do that? And the answer is zero. And because we were maligned for so long, and people still have that mindset, and you know what? It's to their detriment, George, because they are missing out on an awful lot of good books.
I agree. Now the other side of the coin to that is a friend of mine bought a book for his daughter and a self-published book, and he said, George, the grammar and the editing was terrible. I said, well, that's on the author and the editor because they should have done that before the book was published. They should have
exactly
done it like that.
In fact, it sounds like it might have been a first or second draft. And my friend just told me one other thing. She said most of the early authors started out as self-published. Byron started out as self-published. So when I get this, you're self-published or you're an independent author, you're not worth anything. I'm thinking, yeah, my work will still be out there while you're trying to figure out what to do with the rest of your life. I've been on television four times.
Yep, and Mark Twain self-published a couple of books.
Exactly.
So we are among
the greats, my friend. So the next time you get a snotty little comment like that, say, well, bless your heart, honey, you just don't know any better. And that's a good old Southern saying for, you ain't got sense enough to get down out in the rain, idiot.
You know, the book The Martian that Matt Damon starred in was self-published.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. So she has no credibility as far as I'm concerned because she's already closed her mind to what she's missing. That's like saying that, you can't be a CEO because you've never been a CEO before or you never came from a family of CEOs. That's bull hockey. I can get on my soap. I can get on my soapbox about my independent authors. I protect my independent authors real, real close, because when I started, George, in the early 1970s, I was rejected by the Big Six so many times I can wallpaper my house. It was in 2006 when I took my own destiny and said, I will do this on my own and I will answer to no one. The only people I answer to are the people that helped me.
Exactly.
And I haven't looked back. And don't ever allow anyone to say that to you and get away with it, because, my friend, you have already proven your worth over and over again by those children that love your work. Those unique, wonderful children that love you and beg for more. So that lady can just take her happy little stuff and down the road.
Well, I agree. I, you know, what's funny is, well, it's not funny, but any author that's up and coming that finds out that I'm an author, I was like, you know what? I'll make time. I will sit down and show you what I did and what to avoid, what I learned through. And then another thing what's interesting is, Javon, I'm going to the Gen Con in Indiana, which is the biggest show in Indiana. And I am having a table with another science fantasy author. And people go to me, aren't you in competition? I was like,
no.
I don't see this competition. I don't see this competition because, A, his books are totally different than mine, and, B, the way he writes is totally different than mine.
Exactly.
Maybe you like his better than mine. Maybe you like mine better than his. It does not matter to me. There's no competition.
We are not in competition. We're here to help each other to be successful, because I have a mantra, George, and it says, my mantra is this: I am only as successful as I help you to be. And I believe that with all of my heart, because if we don't help each other, then we don't deserve the success that we have.
I agree. So I ask questions because he knows more than I do. I ask questions, I learn, so I can impart that knowledge onto somebody that doesn't know as much as me. I'm all for that. I'm very passionate about that.
And as I am as well. Would you believe that our hour is almost up?
No, is it?
Oh, yes. Wow. So real quick, tell the folks where your books can be found and where you can be found.
Okay. My books are from Amazon, www.amazon.com/author/George Kramer. I'm going to get a website soon. I know I should. And my email address, if you wanted to email me, is George Kramer, GeorgeKramer, author@gmail.com. I'd love to chat, or if you wanted any books, I'd be more than happy to mail.
And you're also on Facebook, correct?
Oh, yes, I am on Facebook. It's facebook.com/ArcadiusTheSorcerer. It takes you to all my books, or if you want to be a personal friend, it's George Kramer. And it's my avatar is all six of the Arcadius series books. Be happy to be friends.
And ladies and gentlemen, if you have a child that... And I do not use the word challenge, because we're all challenged, trust me. I'm living a right-handed world and I'm left-handed. So, but if you have a child that's unique, that has trouble staying focused on classes or anything else, go and get George's books, because I guarantee you that child will absolutely love them. And it will be a stepping stone to teach that child how to progress with his studies, with his chores, with communications with other people, simply because of a book, just a book. And that child can crawl into that book and he can follow these characters on their journey, and he can learn how to make his own journey. Would that be a fair statement, George?
Yes, it is.
Now, I'm going to read something real quick, and you're free to plagiarize it. If you want it, I'll send it to you, because someone gave it to me. And this says, this talks about us as indie authors in our marketing and our purpose, and it goes like this. Your smile is your logo. Your personality is your business card. How you leave others feeling after having an experience with you becomes your trademark.
Well, I like that. I like that.
Well, I will send it to you as well. And I feel very strongly about that, because the way that we behave is our brand. We can have books up from now until Hell's Half Acre freezes over, but if we don't do all of those things, then we don't have a brand. Would that be a fair statement?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've branded my books just based on my personality.
And you have a wonderful personality. That's why you're coming back. That's why you've got to start another book, because you've already got me wanting to go get Blind Blood, and I can't leave it. No, ladies and gentlemen, you can't leave the show yet, or you've got to finish up the show. But go and give him Blind Blood, because he is... I am already interested in it. I can't wait to read it, because I like stuff like that. So, in about 30 seconds or less, how would you tell somebody to fulfill a dream?
I know this is a cliche, but it is true. Never give up. If someone tells you you can't do it, do it. If you have a passion for swimming, take swimming lessons. If you have a passion for writing, write. If someone says, this is terrible, all right, there's more than one person. You know what I'm saying? You have to have a starting point. You have to have confidence in yourself despite any obstacles. As a matter of fact, the most people that succeed are the people that are told they can't do it.
Oh, believe me. Been there, done that many times. Now I just say, if you don't believe me, just watch.
Yep.
Because... The time will come when we're on our deathbed, ladies and gentlemen, and someone's going to make the mistake of saying, do you have any regrets? Don't be that person. Because even if you come back, let's just say that you're reincarnated, you're not going to have the same dreams. And you're going to continue that pattern because you don't know any better, because you put it off the first time. Don't be just a sayer, be a doer. I don't care if your child wants to be a garbage collector, believe me, we need them. Encourage that child in that dream. If your child wants to be an astronaut, don't tell him he's too stupid, he doesn't know how. Give him the tools he needs to fulfill. But, and even if the dream changes, he's had the tools. He didn't fail. He succeeded because he worked toward that goal. And never, ever, ever allow anyone to steal your dream without your permission, because it's your dream, you own it. And when you allow people to steal it, then you've lost it all. Would that be fair to say, George?
I agree, and this is what I tell people. It does not matter to me what you do for an occupation. You could be a garbage man, you could be a janitor. If you are happy and you are helping your family, then there's absolutely nothing wrong with it.
Absolutely, because it's honest and gainful employment.
Yes, absolutely.
George, don't hang up after the show goes dark, because I want to give you some things that I wanted to thank you for spending an hour with me. It's very humbling, and I'm very honored, and I appreciate so much the time you have given me. And I want you to come back, so you got to keep me in the loop of your books. Ladies and gentlemen, tomorrow night, you got a date. Tomorrow night at 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, here on Off the Chain, Andy Keller will be my guest, and she has written some magnificent books. She also writes fantasy. She writes romance. And she was supposed to be on the show last Saturday, had an emergency, and so we're bringing her back tomorrow night for an hour, which will be fun. And just remember what I said, ladies and gentlemen. Don't be that person. Because I'm going to tell you, I've seen too many people, when they got old and sick, say, I shoulda, I woulda, I coulda, but I didn't. And now I live with regrets. Don't be that person. Because you can't go back and redo it. Because once you're gone, you're gone. End of story. Grab your dreams and run with them like you stole them. Because in the end, that's all we have is our dreams. So until tomorrow night at 8 o'clock, be here so we can talk to Anne. George, thank you again so much, and you and I have a date in a few weeks.
My pleasure.
Okay, the show has gone off the air, and we're now in archives, but what I wanted to tell you is once we get off of here and the show goes up into archives, as soon as it archives, I'll put it on my Facebook page and I will tag you in it. And then I want you to use this show any way you want to promote yourself and your books. It's my gift to you. Put it on your website, share it with friends and relatives, whatever you want to do with it. And I will also be uploading the show on podcast.com. Well, podcast, if they get their act together, they've been screwed for the last couple of days. Podcast.com, Podomatic, SoundCloud, Mixcloud, and Spreaker. The show will also go up on iTunes, YouTube, TuneIn Radio, and FM.com, and Stitcher. Yeah, it's overwhelming. So you will be heard in many, many places, my friend. And when the podcast goes up, I will put them on my Facebook page and tag you in them as well, so you can spread the word using any way you wish.
I totally plan on it, and I appreciate having a great conversation. An hour went super fast.
Yes, it always does. So keep me in the loop. Let me know when you're getting ready to put another book out. And if it's not going to be anytime soon, we'll just bring you back, because we didn't get to have stuff I wanted to talk about. So maybe I'll bring you back in August or September. How does that sound?
Sounds awesome.
Okay. You got a date. We will talk later.
Okay. Thank you very much, Yvonne.
Thank you, my dear. Until next time. Bye-bye.